Welcome to Hype, episode 176. My name is Selena. I'm here with Pam, ready to talk about this week's most recent entertainment news stories. Hey, Pam.
Hey, Selena.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. I'm still riding on a high from my recent real-life fandom experience. I just got back from Canada yesterday. I'm totally jet-lagged, which is dampening my excitement a little bit, but I still have plenty of excitement, and I cannot wait to share with everyone what I've been up to over there. It's going to be so much fun. It's weird because, as always, like, you know, when you take a week off from the show, it feels like it's been months. So you totally fall like off the hype wagon.
Yes. Yes. It feels weird as when you're not here, too.
Yes. But you've had some stuff to work with, though. We've been releasing some episodes, including the first episode of our big Merlin rewatch.
Yes. Finally.
I know. it's been a long time coming, and especially because we first planned, if you guys don't know, if you're listening to this, that we first started planning for this like over a year ago, and it's just been about like sort of getting our crap together and feeling like we were in the right mindset to go back to this show that's meant so much to us, and kind of, it's weird, it's like we really have to psych ourselves up to do it, but now that we're in the thick of it and we've watched a couple of episodes, I'm so happy to be talking about Merlin again, because it's one of those rare shows that I think are better than you remember them to be.
Yes, totally.
And what is the other episode that you, I don't know if you've released it yet or if it's coming today.
It's coming hopefully tomorrow. While Selena was gone, had the opportunity to talk to now Academy Award nominee Julian Slater, who is the sound director and mixer of the film Baby Driver. And he and I had a really, really fun, nerdy chat about sound and what went into making that movie a reality, because for those of you who have seen Baby Driver, you'll know that it's not really just about the heist. A lot of the way that that movie works has to do with the sound and the way that it plays throughout the course of the story. So it was just really cool to pick his brain, and I'm so excited for you guys to hear that, and hopefully it'll be coming out either tomorrow or sometime this weekend.
That's so cool. I'm so excited to listen to that. Great stuff is happening. It's so exciting. And yeah, like Pam said, now Oscar nominated, because the Oscar nominations were just released a couple of days ago. And we will be discussing those at length in our Patreon bonus segment. So Hype actually has a Patreon, which you can subscribe to for $2 a month. And for that, you get a weekly bonus discussion along with videos and giveaways and some special Merlin-related, rewatch-related content that we will be putting up there. So if you're interested, you can head on over to patreon.com/hypepodcast and sign up for $2 a month. If you just want to listen to this regular show, or if you're a subscriber but you have thoughts pertaining to the regular show, then you can get in contact with us in one of several ways. You can send us an email, hype@hypeable.com. You can send us a tweet @hypeablehype. You can find us on Instagram @hypeablehype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can find us on Hypeable itself, which is hypeable.com. The comment section is back, everybody. I've been following this development with bated breath, but it is officially back. So if you want to leave a comment over there, you can. I actually think we did get one on our recent Merlin show, so we have to remember to put those into the show as well now that it's back.
Yeah.
Yay, exciting times. Anyway, we have a lot of exciting stuff to get into, and we're going to start with how we hype, which is where we tell you what we've been doing in fandom this past week. You guys, I've been doing stuff in fandom this past week for once. I'm so excited. So where to begin? I feel like I'm getting ready to give a speech here. I'll try to not to make it too long-winded. But basically, as I've been talking about on the show, I went to the Unity Days, the 100 convention in Vancouver. It was very interesting, like, how it came about, because it was actually because I didn't go to Comic-Con that I ended up going here. So it was kind of bad luck turned to good luck, because for various reasons, I had to back out of Comic-Con last summer, and Pam actually went to cover the 100 in my stead. She did a very, very good job, but I was obviously super bummed because I've been looking forward to it. And then there's a bunch of the 100 conventions happening around the world, and Unity Days reached out to me to cover the event as press. And because I was like, this sucks, I never get to do anything, wow, my life is so hard, I decided to like actually make it happen. And it turns out that actually getting from Copenhagen to Vancouver is much cheaper than I assumed it would be. And my brother went with me, which means we could share a hotel room, which brought down that cost. So like all in all, it was just perfect. And I ended up attending as press, and oh my gosh, I don't even know where to begin. It was so exciting. Do you have any questions for me?
Not really a question, but I hear that your presence was very much appreciated by everybody that went. Didn't you retweet somebody that said you were a strong voice in the fandom and they were really happy you were on a panel?
Yes, I did. Thanks, Pam.
I think that you are. Don't sell yourself short.
Well, that was actually one of the most sort of exciting things. And this wasn't just like me personally, but everyone there, like Unity Days, the event organizers, they have worked really hard to curate a really, really positive fandom space. And basically one of the reasons they invited me and the other people that were pressed there was because we focus on the positives, and we focus on, you know, being fair to everyone in the fandom. And we try to sort of basically like have our opinions, but also respect other people's different opinions. And so I was very honored to be chosen for that reason. And I think just coming to the space and interacting with the people, it's so clear that this theme of unity is really permeating. Like literally, I did not have one bad experience. It was just, everyone were great. Everyone were nice. Everyone were welcoming and open. And I was surprised by like how many people actually read my stuff and had nice things to say. I really was not expecting that. My brother was with me, and so he had a really fun time on one of the days he was there, because like people, I would just interact with all these people and they would know who I was, I would know who they were. And he has no real insight into fandom life. So for him, it was just like a glimpse into this world that we inhabit that doesn't really overlap with off-screen life. So it was interesting. It was an interesting experience. It was so fun. And yeah, we did our panel on the Saturday, myself and my fellow, the 100 reviewers, Tiffany and Jana. And yeah, I think it went really well. I think I ended up moderating it. So it's a good thing I have a bit of hosting experience, one might say. And it was fun. We just really just talked about how much we loved the show and these people, and the actors that were attending were really positive and nice and shared wonderful stories and funny stories that you wouldn't get elsewhere. And it was weird. It was weirdly like private and intimate. Like I'm working on a post right now recapping the whole thing, and I'm almost finding that some of the things I almost don't want to put into print because it feels like it was like setting confidentiality between the actors and like 200 people. Do you know what I mean? Like it's a weird feeling because they were kind of off guard. Like it wasn't a press event. It wasn't like a Comic-Con. It was very much like private fan actor interactions.
That's really nice. And then they must feel too, like I imagine, I've never been, but I know that Supernatural holds their own conventions for fans. And I imagine that that's must be how they feel. When we had Misha Collins on, he talked a lot about interacting with the fandom. And so it's really nice to know that that relationship exists among other shows and its fans.
Yeah.
I've always admired that.
Yeah, honestly, I think that, and I know this is like everybody says this about their own fandom, but I honestly think that the 100 fandom is really something special. I think when you have a show that tackles such big emotion and big like questions of humanity, like you do get the same big emotion and big conflict among the people that watch the show as well. You know, the show really sort of, it almost provokes you into taking sides in a way. And I think people do that. But I think it's also when you have a show like this, I think you also get people that watch it that want to engage with humanity. It's a weird thing to say, but I think I really do think it's true. I think the 100 fans are extremely thoughtful and conscientious and open and welcoming. And we actually, one of the highlights that I did want to bring up was the big Cancer Gets Lost charity auction, which was hosted by Jo Garfine, who I got to spend a lot of time with this weekend, actually. And she is a wonderful human being. She comes from the Lost fandom. She's done this charity organization, Cancer Gets Lost. She's done that for about like 5, 6 years, 7 years, a long time at this point. And they held a silent auction at Unity Days, and they raised more than $10,000. You know, and this was just auction, not just, but this was auctioning off like fan art that fans had created. And a bit of like more official stuff, and it was signed. A lot of it was signed by cast members. A lot of it wasn't, but everyone was bidding on it, and they raised so much money. It was just fantastic. It's just wonderful to see fandom harnessed for something that is so concretely useful and positive and amazing. And I was in awe of that. I think that it proves why, like, one of the reasons why fandom is so important, because you harness this energy and this positivity, and you inspire people to be creative, and you inspire people to donate to good causes. And it was wonderful. I was very in awe of that. So oh my goodness. What mm-hmm. else should I talk about?
You said you had a good story that you
I guess one more thing happened. Yes, I did. I did have a good story. I promised that I would save it for on air. I'm competing with whoever is drilling for the microphone. So I'm sorry if you guys can hear that, by the way. It's very distracting. But yeah, no, when I was there, I wasn't doing any interviews or anything like that, because that wasn't like a part of the agreement at the event, which was totally fine because I was there to just sort of soak up the atmosphere. But I had been talking a little bit to the showrunner, Jason Rothenberg. He was meant to attend, but unfortunately he had to work, so he couldn't do the panel that he was supposed to do. But I had been talking a little bit with his assistant, and we had been thinking about maybe setting up like an interview when I was there. That didn't work out, but what I did get to do was just, I had this message from her at some point. I was sitting in one of the panels, and she was like, can you be like across town in 10 minutes? And I was like, yes. And so I like ran out and I got a taxi, and I got to the place that I was supposed to get, and Jason was there. And we had, well, I say we had drinks. I had a Diet Coke, but it counts. And yeah, basically he just wanted to like see me when I was there. And we ended up talking about the show and the fandom and stuff for like 2 hours. Just completely like, completely off the record, by the way. So it was like a private conversation that we had, but it was so nice. Like I'm still like so shocked that he bothered.
That's really nice. That makes me feel really good, because, you know, it's so funny when you cover shows, and, you know, if you do it right, or, you know, if you do it right, or if you have a showrunner that cares, there is the potential to just have a mutual respect amongst you and the person that's running this thing. And, but you never really know where you stand until you go and actually see these people in person. So I like that you got to have that moment, because you've been covering the show for so long, and, you know.
And that's what I think is really nice about, because Jason, he recently returned to Twitter as well. He's been interacting with fans more. He also had, there was a couple of the girls, they do Metastation, a podcast that is amazing if you're the 100 fan, and you absolutely should listen to that. But he had them out like for drinks as well, and they were just chatting. And I think he's reaching out to fandom more now, which I really appreciate. And I think getting to open up the conversation, even to just a few people, or even just in these small ways that he is, I think is really great. And it's really encouraging. And I think, like, obviously, again, our conversation was private, so it's not like I can be like, so here's what we talked about. But it was really sort of I don't even know. It's hard to talk about. I found it just a really good experience. And it was really sort of, I changed my sort of just approach, because it is, I think that is kind of a cliche thing to say, but in general, Unity Days sort of reminds you that there are real human beings behind the tweets. You know what I mean? Like in general, like online, it's so easy to reduce people to the parts of them that they choose to share with you, or to make assumptions based on a very limited point of view, and just getting to put faces and voices to the people that you have been interacting with, whether that's Jason or whether that's the actors or whether that's the fans, I think that just is so invaluable. And I think for someone like me, who you guys know, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm not a big real life fandom person. I'm not a big convention person. I've had some experiences in the past that have made me really wary of these kinds of situations. And I've been like, some things like make me really uncomfortable. And that's just like because of who I am as a person. But this experience just helped me sort of understand the value of events like this. And I know that Unity Days is not planning to do one in 2019, but I really hope they change their minds, because, yeah, first of all, I really want to go. I want to go back. But I also just think that an event like this, like, they really practice what they preach in terms of positivity and unity. Clearly, the person who's drilling next door agrees, because it just got even louder. I'm sorry about that, guys. I have no idea what's happening. But I think that the space they've created, even some of the actors who attended, like Sachin Sahel, who plays Jackson, is a huge Unity Days cheerleader. And he's like campaigning hard to get another one. And I can see why. I can see what makes this so special. So I did want to say one last thing, just funny, like of my interaction with Jason, was that when we were, because we walked back to where the convention was, and he actually gave me like a tour, and like impromptu tour of the places where they filmed the City of Light stuff from season 3. So I got to see like Jasper's bench and the famous stairs and the place where Clark came up like of the tunnel when it was all empty and stuff like that. So that was really fun. That was a very fun little experience. It was all wonderful, honestly. Like, I had the best time. And I love Vancouver as well. Mm-hmm. That is an amazing city. Like, I definitely want to go back there.
It's beautiful. I've only been once, but it's just such a lovely city. And I don't know if you got, like, out to the outskirts, like, up to the mountains and stuff like that, but it's just, like, there's so much there. And I love that it's so walkable. It's a great, city.
Because same. I walk everywhere. Like, I don't like when I have to take transportation to get places. So for me, it was perfect, because you could just walk from one end of the city to another. Like, very much like Copenhagen, actually, in that regard. And the scenery, because, you know, I've lived in both Norway and Wales, and this was just like those places. Like, I don't know why I'm so attracted to exactly that type of place, but it's very similar. But yeah, so no, I definitely have to go back. I will say some tourist highlights, if anyone listening is thinking about heading out there, are definitely the Anthropology Museum, which was fantastic. And then also the aquarium, which was like, people tried to sell that to me all weekend, including Jason was like, it's so good, you should go. And I was like, but aquarium, like fish, like I don't get it. But then I went, and now I'm converted. I think that it was amazing. So all in all, an absolutely wonderful, wonderful time. And for me personally, it was just like really sort of mind altering in a way. And I hope that I get to attend some more events like this now, because I'm kind of over my fear of them now, I think. So yay all around. Look for my post on Hypebol to wrap up the event, like less in a less rambly format, and feature some of the things they could tease about season 5 as well. And the drilling has stopped. Yay! Oh, perfect timing. Oh, wait, no, it's back.
Oh, no.
Never mind, false alarm. All right.
Oh, no.
So anyway, we have some news this week to get into, and I actually have the first couple of stories, not because I want to keep talking. I'm actually, like, getting hoarse now, but just because I have the movie stories. So the first story that we have to talk about this week is the Disney's Sword in the Stone live-action movie has landed a director. Du-du-du-du. It is some guy named Juan Carlos Frenadillo. How would you say that name?
Let's see here. How would I say this director's name? Juan Carlos Frenadillo.
Fresnadillo. Okay.
Fresnadillo. All right. I think. Okay. I don't know. No. Where's he from?
Well, I don't know. I don't know anything about this director. I've never heard of him before. But according to The Hollywood Reporter, he is in negotiation, so it's not official yet. He has directed 28 Weeks Later, which is a fantastic movie. I'm already feeling better about this choice. And he will be joined by writer Brian Cogman, who you may know from Game of Thrones, with a Brigham Taylor from The Jungle Book serving as producer. So the interesting thing about this, not only is it not Ridley Scott, apparently, who's directing, he has also been in talks to helm the Merlin saga, as we discussed in the last episode of the podcast, and it looks more likely now that he will be directing that one. But it's interesting because these choices suggest that The Sword in the Stone movie adaptation will be somewhat darker than its animated counterpart. The original 1963 animated version was very sweet, very silly, very dancey. It was one of my early favorites for sure of the Disney animated movies, but it makes sense that they will be trying to like darken it up a little bit, because I think the story of King Arthur and Merlin, like, not only has it been told a million times before, but with the recent Guy Ritchie version and with sort of the grittier reboots of all these old legendary movies, I think like twisting The Sword in the Stone to maybe just darken it to the extent that like Jungle Book was darkened, right? Because I feel like it's still my favorite live action that they've done. They balanced the heart and the drama and the legitimate like scary parts very, very, very well, and I would love to see Sword in the Stone done in like that similar tone.
Yeah, I think that you're right. I also am a huge fan of the animated classic, the Disney animated classic. I think it's so much fun, but even if you look at those elements, some of which were silly, like the whole like Madame Mim, evil witch in the forest, that also lends itself to being a lot creepier than it was in the animated version. So there's definitely a lot of room to play with the elements that the original brought up. But also if you look at even like T.H. White's Sword in the Stone, which is what Disney based their animated version on, you know, they also have a big opportunity to go a lot darker with Arthur's backstory, because he's born as basically like an orphan and heavily abused by the family that takes him in, kind of. You know, they treat him like a slave, basically.
It's very Harry Potter, isn't it?
Yeah, they kind of like force him. They say, oh, if you're good, you can be Kay Squire. And he wants to be Kay Squire because that's the only way he thinks he'll ever move up in the world. And anytime he does anything wrong, they kind of take that away from him. And for like a young child, that could be like, that's like very damaging. It's, you know, it's kind of holding this carrot that in front of their nose that you're never really going to give them. So,
yeah, I'm tentatively excited for this one. And then our second piece of movie news this week is The Incredibles 2 has revealed some new characters, including someone I'm particularly excited about, the one played by Sophia Bush, but that's just because I love Sophia Bush. But some of the new characters, they've released like this basically character that comparison where they like match up the images, which is very funny, and they've actually put them through the Google portrait tool that is not available in Europe, so I'm a little bit bitter about that, not gonna lie, because I really wanted to do that. But it's a very fun feature. Helen Parr, Elastigirl, is played by Holly Hunter, And Bob Parr, Mr. Incredible, is played by Craig T. Nelson. Violet is played by Sarah Vowell. Dashiell Dash Parr is played by Huckleberry Huck Milner. It's very, very sweet. Lucius Best, aka Frozone, is played by Samuel L. Jackson. Edna Mode is played by Brad Bird. Was this the case for the last one as well? That's hilarious. I didn't know. That's the director. Winston Dever is played by Bob Odenkirk. Evelyn Dever is played by Catherine Keener. Rick Dickner is played by Jonathan Banks. Void is played by Sophia Bush. Yay! Ambassador is played by Isabella Rossellini. And that is it. That's the cast. This looks and sounds really, really cool. I am very, very excited. It is also interesting to note here that the movie sounds like it's going to feature Elastigirl in a much more prominent role. It says here that Helen Parr, known in the super world as Elastigirl, hung up her supersuit to raise the family with husband Bob, leaving their crime-fighting days behind them. But when she's tapped to lead a campaign to bring the supers back into the spotlight, she finds she can still bend, stretch, and twist herself into any shape needed to solve the trickiest of mysteries. In short, she's still got it. That's good news, too, because a new villain is emerging, unlike any they've seen before. This is so exciting. I'm so excited for this movie. Are you as well?
Oh, yeah. We've been waiting so long that it's almost surreal to realize that it comes out this summer.
I know. Yeah. June 15th is when it comes out. So that's a minute away. That's not very long.
It's right around the corner, really. We're already on our way out of January. So,
yes. Very, very exciting. So you can head on over to Hypeable to see all of those pictures.
Hmm. Well, keeping in the Disney entities, I don't know if you grew up also loving a good family sports drama, but those were my jam back in the day. So I was pleasantly surprised to see that we learned earlier this week that the Mighty Ducks is currently in the process of potentially being developed into a TV series at ABC Signature Studios. So for those of you that don't know, the Mighty Ducks is centered around a washed-up lawyer who has to do some community service, ends up coaching a Pee Wee hockey team that's really, really bad. And it's just, it's the classic tale of the underdog, and I love this trilogy so much. It just makes me so happy. It's so great. Really, really, kind of like a gem of the 90s, and if for some reason you kind of missed the boat on it, definitely worth going back to watch those. It stars a young Joshua Jackson too, which is exciting for all you, Dawson's Creek fans out there. So the interesting thing about this potential TV series is that allegedly it was actually proposed by the original trilogy screenwriter Stephen Brill and original producer of the films Jordan Kerner. And that little tip comes from The Hollywood Reporter, who was the first to report on this development. So the fact that they have some of these key players that are interested in kind of coming back perhaps with a whole new story should give fans of the original trilogy a little bit of room to hope here that perhaps if the show gets picked up off the ground, it'll be just as heartwarming as the first three movies were. There's no other details yet with regards to the plot or if they'll bring other actors back on, but it should be kind of fun to keep tabs on this and see if it moves past development and into production.
Cool. Yeah, as I said, I've never seen this show. I was one of the people that missed the boat on it. I don't even think it aired over here. But this sounds really exciting. It looks, just based on the picture alone, it looks really fun.
It's really cute. It's just like this ragtag group of kids and they all want to play hockey and they're all like not very good. And then he teaches them how to be a team and it's really sweet.
Cool.
Highly recommend.
Cool. So speaking of things that are coming to the small screen, What We Do in the Shadows, the vampire mockumentary created by none other than Taika Waititi of Thor Ragnarok fame, as well as Jermaine Clement, who worked with him on Flight of the Conchords as well, is getting a TV adaptation at FX. So it's been giving a pilot production order. Let's wait and see what happens, but this is certainly very promising. So if you have not seen What We Do in the Shadows, which is hilarious, it's basically, it was released in 2014, and it features like vampires trying to live normal lives, basically, and staying in the same like place while they couldn't go outside during the day, and features all of their like shenanigans. It's very, very funny, and Waititi actually starred in it as well. Of further interest, the pilot will involve both Clement and Waititi, who Clement is writing it while Waititi is directing. The cast of the new series has also been revealed. Kaivan Novak, Matt Berry, Natasha Dimitriou, and Harvey Gillen are starring in the TV reboot. Have you seen this movie?
Yes, I love this movie. It's so funny.
It's just like my type of humor. I think it's hysterical. Yeah. So, and I'm glad to see that they are involved with the reboot as well, right? Because like otherwise, who knows if like what other people might do with this concept.
Yeah, I see. Actually, it's so funny because when I was writing the story up, I wasn't really sure how the fan base was going to react, because it's not necessarily a classic yet. It's not old enough to be a classic, but it's got like this cult following and was very well received when it came out in 2014, this movie. So the fan base that, you know, is still going strong seems to be really excited about this. And I think a lot of that excitement has to do with the fact that both Jemaine and Taika are coming back to kind of work behind the scenes on this. So even if we don't get to see them, you know, kind of in little walk-on roles, it is exciting to know that the brand of humor that we've come to know and love from both of these guys is still going to be present in the series.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because like the last sort of comedy mockumentary, like we've had like The Office and Parks and Recreation, obviously. So it'll be fun to see like a different one, like for the TV format, how they'll do that, how much they'll play up the mockumentary aspect of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, totally agree. I feel like this is the episode of reboots.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Like every episode.
We have some more reboot news for you guys. I feel like you're going to be so tired of the reboots, but you know, Hollywood's not giving us much to work with on the news front. So we got to cover all the big stuff, which includes Freeform's announcement that Party of Five, the hit 90s family drama, is officially coming back.
Of course it is.
With a bit of a twist. Did you watch Party of Five when it aired, or are you aware of this show?
Of course I did, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
It's cute. I mean, I really like this. You know, this show, I think, was probably a show that I was too young to be watching when it aired, but my mom was a big fan, so we would watch it with my mom. And it kind of introduced us to a lot of actors that went on to do amazing things as they got older, including Matthew Fox, Neve Campbell, Lacey Chabert, and Scott Wolf. They all played the Salinger siblings who they actually have to band together after their parents die in a car crash. So that's kind of like the way that the story sets itself up. And in the new Freeform reboot, which actually comes from the original series creators, Chris Kaiser and Amy Lippman, the story is not going to center on a family of orphan children, but they will kind of be orphaned in a way. So they're actually going to be playing around with an immigration storyline where the Buenitas siblings will find themselves having to figure out how to survive as a family after their parents are suddenly deported back to Mexico. So it definitely sounds like they're going to be shedding a spotlight on a very real issue that affects a lot of families across the United States. And I mean, like, I don't know how I feel about a lot of reboots. I think if you had asked me, like, are you into the idea of a new Party of Five? I probably would have been like, oh, I think I could skip that. But the fact that, you know, they've decided to go with this particular storyline kind of makes me hope that the show does well, especially if they're going to be, you know, tackling this accurately and with respect and stuff like that. And hopefully it opens the eyes to the American public of, you know, this very real issue that families all over the country struggle with.
You know, I like this trend. This is also kind of along the lines of what Roswell is doing, that reboot, because it's also going to be focused on immigrants, you know, with the border troubles in New Mexico and sort of paralleling the, now I'm forgetting what exactly it was, but I think it's paralleling the stories of the new Max, who is an alien, and then Liz, who is an undocumented immigrant. So mm-hmm. I love that these stories are being told more. And this is like a direct way in which culture is reflecting what is happening in your society right now. So I think it's very important and certainly makes me a lot more interested for this reboot, I think. It's a good way of updating it and making it relevant and sort of using an old brand to tell a new story. Fun fact, Party of Five is the reason I watched Lost because of Matthew Fox.
Yes. I actually didn't realize that Matthew Fox was on Party of Five until like way into Lost.
That's funny.
Yes. So we have a little bit more TV news to wrap things up for you guys. Riverdale is still going strong on the CW, and they're about to tread new water. We learned earlier this week that there will be a musical episode of Riverdale that will center around Riverdale High's production of Carrie the Musical. And yes, that is Carrie, as in Stephen King's Carrie. So the Riverdale High version is set to blend elements of King's classic novel with Brian De Palma's 1976 film, and of course, Broadway's production of Carrie the Musical. The episode is going to be called A Night to Remember, and there's going to be 11 songs featured over the course of the episode's run. So this should be pretty fun if you are interested in seeing, you know, the show kind of tackle something a little bit new. Of course, Riverdale has done musical interludes before with Josie and the Pussycats and things like that. It's not like we haven't seen a lot of these characters singing. And of course, Archie has his stupid I want to be a musician storyline that's still kind of going, but not really. But it'll be fun to see some of these other characters, I'm sure, kind of get into the singing game. Over on Instagram, Riverdale's official Insta account tweeted out this really fun graphic that looks like a cast sheet, you know, that you would pin up in a high school, telling everybody who got which part, and that kind of clues us into who's going to be playing which role in this musical episode. Cheryl's going to be playing Carrie, so that should be pretty fun. And you can head over to Hypebeable to see who everybody else is going to be playing.
Oh, yeah, that is actually really interesting. You know, it's funny because I saw this and my first thought was just like, isn't every episode a musical episode because they shoehorn in Archie's dumb singing every chance they get? But I mean, this is a fun concept. And Riverdale, I mean, you know how I feel about Riverdale. We don't have to go down that road, but it's basically the show where like anything they want to happen happens. There are no real boundaries, and in some ways that must be very freeing for them. So I'm sure this will be a blast. And actually, mm-hmm. I think Cheryl is great. So I think that her playing Carrie is pretty great. It's pretty good call on their mm-hmm. part. She'll be yeah. good.
So that episode, A Night to Remember, is set to air on April 18th at 8 p.m. in case any of you guys want to tune in. Also just around the corner.
Cool. Cool. So that brings us to the end of this week's news stories. Not a whole lot of stories this week, but we did have a Uni Today to recap. We're going to move in now to TV Show of the Week. And I have a couple of stories. We have two each. So let's go back and forth again. So on my journey, one of the things that I did was, because Netflix obviously has different content available in different countries, so when I was over in Canada, I made sure to get my hands on the entire fourth season of Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which I've been waiting to watch for so long. And I finished it, and I loved it. That cliffhanger, oh my God, you guys, I have no idea how I'm supposed to wait to find out what happens. I think Brooklyn Nine-Nine is such a good comedy because it manages to be... It can be really deep, you know, it really hits you with the deepness. This was also the one where they did their episode on Terry being assaulted by a police officer, basically, and tackling that issue, which is also hugely prevalent right now. And I really, really enjoyed it. I think Brooklyn Nine-Nine, it took me a while, as you guys know, to get into it, and much to Marima's frustration, I'm sure, but I love it now. I love all the characters. I love what's going on. I think it's a wonderful antidote to real life. Like, even though it does tackle real life issues, it does it with a smile. And I think that's really nice. So I like it. Now I have to wait for season 5. And unfortunately, my plan to get Crazy Ex-Girlfriend in London when we changed flights was derailed because I only had time to download the one episode. So now basically I have seen the first episode of season 3. I can see episodes that haven't aired yet, but I cannot see the ones that have aired yet. So that sucks. And what about you? What is the first of yours?
Oh, the first of mine is just to let you guys know that One Day at a Time season 2 is about to hit Netflix on Friday, January 26th. So the day after we're recording this for me, it's 11:52 p.m. right now. So,
oh my god!
By the time we finish wrapping up this show, it will be the day that One Day at a Time premieres on Netflix. And it's a wonderful, wonderful sitcom. I didn't know this until I was making my mom sit through the pilot because I thought that she would really enjoy it, that it's actually a remake of the One Day at a Time 80s sitcom that aired, well, obviously back in the 80s. I already said that. But yeah, but it's really great. And I've been making my whole family watch it and they all really love it. And if you're looking for something really fun and really heartwarming, that isn't afraid to kind of get real at certain points, then I highly recommend checking out One Day at a Time on Netflix. Season 1 is already up, obviously, and by the time this comes out, season 2 will be out. It's a great little 30-minute sitcom, so really easy to power through the episodes if you're interested in that.
Awesome. Yeah, I saw people were really excited for that to come to more of it. I should probably check that out at some point. The second show I wanted to talk about this week is one that everyone else has finally watched. Thank God. I don't know if Pam's watched it, but if you haven't, you need to get on it, which is the CW's Black Lightning, which premiered, and I believe the second episode has aired as well now. These screeners went up a while back, and I watched a couple of episodes, however many were out at the time, and I love this show, and I'm not the only one who loves it. Everyone loves it. It had a great premiere over on the CW and with good reason. This is a very, very good show. And that's coming from someone who is not a superhero show fan, really. You know, I've tried them all and I've ended up not watching them all because I feel like there's a little bit of a lack of I don't want to be super mean, so I'll just say that they're not my thing. But Black Lightning does not have the same issues at all. I think they do, like, from the moment it starts, they paint really complicated, interesting characters that feel like they have a lot of depth to them. And obviously, Black Lightning, the actual Black Lightning man, is the main character, but his daughters play a huge role. One of his daughters is basically set up to be, she has the same power as him, so she's also, it's also like a very empowering show for women, and obviously it's a way to really diversify the superhero slate. It's really sort of positive and empowering and only a little bit unsettling that the enemies are called the 100, but okay, whatever. Try not to take it personally. And I cannot wait to keep watching this show and for this world to be unfolded, because I think there's a lot to dive into here. I feel like the writers are really trying to tell a story that matters with this show and using the superhero medium to do that. And I wish more shows would do that. Have you seen it?
I haven't. It's on my list, but everybody that I know who has seen it is obsessed with it already. So
yes, yeah, it needs to move like high up on your list. Also, because it's so hyped, you know, you want to ride the wave of hype.
I forgot that it had already aired. I know that we've had screeners for a while. I just haven't gotten around to it. You know what else I screened too, by the way, instead of Black Lightning, which is adorable? I just went on a Netflix binge because Netflix is so generous to us. And like, you don't get like just 2 episodes, you get like the whole season. Yes. I watched the new Queer Eye reboot that's out coming out next month on Netflix. Queer Eye was a really big deal back in the 90s, I think. And it did a lot in terms of putting the LGBT community into the spotlight and really kind of showcasing like who they were as people. And you know, a lot of people credit it too for like acceptance in the mainstream media, that show. But Netflix is back with a whole new Fab Five, and it's such a heartwarming, it is a reality show, but it's so heartwarming. And if that is something of interest to you and you want something that's going to make you feel great, I would recommend checking that out. I think all episodes go live on February 7th. So that's a little bonus TV show of the week that I watched instead of Black Lightning.
Cool. And what was the other one you had?
The other one is The Resident. The Resident is a new series on Fox. It's been getting a lot of buzz. I don't really need a medical drama in my life, but Matt Zuckery, who we will all know from Gilmore Girls, he played Logan on there, is the star of this new show. And I am like honestly very meh on the pilot. I only watched the first episode. But basically, he is a resident at this hospital where the chief of surgery is kind of like this really corrupt dude who has botched a bunch of surgeries, and everybody just covers for him, and he's just like an awful, awful man. But then Matt Zuckery's character is like a little too full of himself, because he's basically, actually, one of our listeners and I were tweeting about the show, and she made a really good point. She likened him to Logan if Logan had ditched publishing and gone on to be a doctor. So that should give you a really good idea, if you're a Gilmore Girls fan, of like what this character is. But the problem I had with the pilot, honestly, is that it set up a lot, but it didn't really, I feel like where it missed the mark is that it didn't really make you care very much about finding out why the setup was important. And I also really wanted to like this show too, because aside from, you know, Matt Zuckery's involvement, Emily Van Camp is in this too, and I love her. I think she's done great stuff. Yeah. But the pilot was just so-so for me. So I'm going to give it maybe two or three more episodes before I decide, but it's really hard for me to get invested in a medical drama. I haven't been invested in a medical drama since Grey's, and I dropped that a few seasons ago because it just wasn't interesting me anymore. And so we'll see. We'll see how I get on with this, but I know a lot of people have been enjoying it. It just might not be for me, and I won't be sure yet until I give it a few more episodes to really kind of set things up a bit better.
All right, cool. As my friends at Brooklyn Nine-Nine would say. I just realized, by the way, we forgot to talk about Paul Bettany being cast in The Crown. So there you go. that's your little insert news post right there. I want to keep everyone abreast of all The Crown news because I love it so much. He's tapped to play Prince Philip. So the cast is lining up very nicely.
That's so exciting.
Yes, I'm so excited.
Into it.
Me too. Moving into listener feedback, we have a bunch of tweets, and actually just tweets from you guys this week. There were no emails? It's fine. There's a lot of tweets.
I don't think so. We didn't do a show last week though, so.
It's true. We did. And we do have some Merlin feedback, but we're obviously going to save that for our next Merlin rewatch. We also do need to plan that, actually. I forget, did we record already for episode 2?
No.
We didn't? I feel like we did.
No, we didn't.
It was just
we did
in
a
my
commentary
head.
In the, we did two episodes, but they were commentary in a.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
And a discussion.
Well, anyway, we have some tweets. I'm glad that the drilling finally stopped for you guys. Like, even if it was trying to drown me out, at least you guys get your voices heard. So do you want to get the first tweet?
Yes. This one comes from Amy Lynn Craig, who says, I'm 3 episodes behind on the podcast. I need to catch up. Yikes.
Well, to be fair, we do put up a lot of stuff at the moment, so
that's true.
I don't blame you.
And you're going to get like 2 episodes at the end of this week, basically. Yeah. So
enjoy. Emmy Foss says, in addition to the Helena Bonham Carter cast in The Crown news, Helena also played the Queen Mother in The King's Speech with Colin Firth, and she was amazing. She was also nominated for an Oscar, and I think she won the Globe for that role. Also, I'm so excited for the Merlin rewatch. I have so many Merlin thoughts, but they're all so spoilery, so I'm going to shut up for like a season or two. Well, maybe our discussion will spark some feedback you can send in to us, Emmy, if you're watching along with us. It's hard to be spoiler-free, but we can do it. We have some experience.
Yes. It's a lot harder to have been noticing when we don't have somebody holding us accountable on the show that's watching for the first time.
Yes.
It is more friends, basically. We have a tweet from Shelly as well who says, just hit play on episode one of Merlin for probably the third time. Don't know why, but the first two times didn't hook me. Thanks, Hype, for convincing me to give it another try. Also, thanks for the shout out. I did actually watch the first episode, and I'm planning to watch more today. I'll probably read more fan fiction too, but I might need to stick to AUs to avoid spoilers. I also read the Loaded March series. Really, really good. And finally, I saw a screening of Love, Simon. I'm so jealous, Shelly. I saw a screening of Love, Simon yesterday, and it was great. Super cute, really funny, and my theater was really into it. Also, I totally forgot who Blue was, so I was actually caught by all the twists. That's really cool.
That's so cool. Oh my God, I cannot wait to see this movie. I'm
Me
so excited.
Me too.
Grady Bridges says, was hoping you could clarify something from Unity Days. Oh, this is for me. The question was regarding the toughest scene and the waterboarding came up. Someone on Twitter said Bob said it was tough to see and some made it seem like Nadia was in actual discomfort. And another question, there is cannibalism rumor on the 100, but people seem to be saying it's because they run out of food. Was that said? To me, the 5-year/1200 people wasn't a limit when Kane was talking, but rather how much life they can support and they could go longer if necessary. I'm hoping cannibalism is a choice because it's not a sustainable diet over a year's time. Plus, I can't see them letting Kane, Abby, Nyla, or Octavia eat people. All right, so the first one was from the panel. Now, I only attended the panels in Unity Day, so anything that was said during the autographs or pictures was like, is only stuff that I've heard, and I probably haven't heard everything. Well, Nadia Hilker, who played Luna, was there, and I do remember her talking about that scene being really tough. I think Bob talked about hanging upside down in Mount Weather, and it sounded like it was actually like they pushed them really hard in those scenes. But I feel like my impression of it was that it was like a tough scene to shoot, but not that it was like, I feel, because they did, I think that her exact words were something like, well, they told me to like shout if it became too much, but I was already screaming or something like that, which sounds a little bit scary, but I think the intention was that like, if it gets too much, let us know, right? But she was like giving it, it was the scene where she was like being drowned and had that rag in her mouth in season 3, which looked absolutely harrowing, and I'm sure it was absolutely harrowing to film, but I didn't get the impression that they were like going beyond what she had agreed to. I don't know. I wasn't there. I only can say what I heard from the panel. Yeah, there is a cannibalism rumor, and that was actually, I think that started at the autographs, so I didn't actually hear them say this, but the cannibalism rumor has been floating around basically since the end of season 4, and also since we saw that picture of Octavia like covered in blood. So it's really funny, like if it does end up being true, it'll be really funny because we've all kind of been joking about it all along, but it, in a way, it seems like very logical. I don't think they said it's because they run out of food. I think that's total conjecture. At least nobody said it when I was there. And I think you are right that it's not a sustainable diet over a year's time, but I think if it is true that they do run out of food after 5 years, like then they don't really have a choice if they want to survive. Like I think, I don't know any of this, but I think that it's tough because it could go so many different ways, but I imagine that the bunker scenario, like after those 5 years are up, they will go completely like stir crazy in there. Like they will actually just start going insane and I do think, like, while in theory you would think those, like, food, like the farms and stuff could run indefinitely, I'm sure there will be some kind of, like, limit on how long they can sustain it. So it will actually be a question of them being hungry. But again, like, I think that this is all speculation. I don't actually know. But I will just say, on your last point about, like, you can't see them letting these characters eat people, we've already had cannibalism on the show. This is the thing that really interests me about the sort of the resistance in fandom to this potential plotline, is in season two, the Reapers were cannibals, and even Mount Weather, like, even though they were taking blood, I think that, you know, you can argue that that's as macabre as cannibalism, right? Like, it's one step removed, I think. So I would not really be that freaked out by this development. I actually think it makes a lot of sense, and it would do a lot to show the desperation and just, like, savagery in a way of the society that Octavia has created, and it would kind of fit her in a weird way. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'm totally on board the cannibalism theory, but as far as I'm aware, it's not officially confirmed yet. It's basically based on something that was said in one of the autograph sessions and conjecture from fandom and some, like, behind the scenes pictures. Like, people are putting things together. And I was just going to tell you guys right now, if Jaha actually gets eaten, like, if that's just not a theory, if that actually happens, then I should probably laugh. I'll also be very upset. But it would also be kind of hilarious.
It would be a little funny. It's kind of like in Walking Dead when they introduced cannibalism and they ate Bob's leg. They, like, had a barbecue, if you will.
Yeah, yeah. It's cannibalism, like, but in a fun way.
It's not funny, but it is, because it's so, like, it's, I don't know why we don't think cannibalism can be real, even though it obviously is, like, something that could actually be happening.
It obviously can be, but it's just, I think it's just such an over-the-top concept.
It is, especially in the concept of, like, a post-apocalyptic world, like, in The 100. It's, like, it's just kind of, like, an of course thing. Like, wouldn't bat an eyelash.
Yeah, right, right.
You're right. I think that, sense. Like, yeah, I mean, a lot of it's kind of, like, I think you were saying, like, I can't see them letting Kane, Abby, Nyla, or Octavia eat people. But I think, like, a lot of these characters, if it was, like, a choice of survival or not survival, like, they would just do it.
Yeah, like, yeah. It's like that story of the...
The Donner Party?
I don't know. I was thinking the plane crash. Do you know that story of, like, the... Was it a sports team that crashed? I have to look this up now.
And they ate each other?
Yeah, wait, it was a movie made about it.
Oh, really?
It was Alive. It was a film from 1993, and it was the story of the Andes survivors. It was also based on a book from 1974. It was a real story. I'm just reading the Wikipedia page now. It was the Uruguayan rugby team. They were involved in a crash, and it crashed in the Andes Mountains in 1972. And of the 45 people, I'm basically just reading, this is really interesting. Of the 45 people on the flight, only 16 survived. It was sub-zero temperatures. So after, like, they were stuck there because the rescue team ended the search. So they stayed, like, they survived on rations. And when the rations ran out, they had to eat the dead bodies to survive. And it was possible to do this because the bodies had been preserved because it was freezing. So yeah, that was like that is the story that I keep coming back to whenever I think of cannibalism inside the bunker, would be something like that, where it becomes a question of, well, if there are these dead bodies for whatever reason, like, I don't think they will kill people to eat them, or maybe they will, maybe that's how they keep the population down. But I think it's more of a question of, well, we have no food, we're going to starve, there are dead bodies here, what are we going to do? Survival at all costs, right?
Yeah, especially since that's what they've always done.
So. Exactly. I could imagine something like that, but I have no idea. We might come to season five and there will be no cannibalism after
Maybe
all.
Maybe not.
And
then we'll be talking about cannibalism for no reason.
Yeah, no. Just random cast.
Awkwardly laughing about it too. It's like cannibalism. Yeah. Ha 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 ha.
Yeah. Could you imagine, guys, if we'd had to eat people? That would be crazy. Anyway, that was anyway.
Laura Morrow says, being down with a flu is very upsetting, but especially because I can't really watch TV, listen to podcasts, or read complex books. Good news, I have read 3 books in 3 days. Wow. Well, I hope that means you're feeling better, Laura. Laura also says, on your rec, I watched The Big Sick. Thanks, Pam. Really loved it. And aww, I'm finally watching Greek.
Aww.
Yay. So far, so good. Thanks for the recs. Also, I know you both are not the biggest This Is Us fans. Say what you want, but they really know how to craft a story down to the smallest details. I was a blubbering mess on Super Bowl Sunday, but I got answers. This was actually last week's episode. Laura, I'm actually caught up on This Is Us. Shocker, I know. I have some problems with it, but I'm still tuning in, so it hasn't lost me yet. She brings up a really good point in terms of like the details specifically in this episode and the way that they laid them all out was very well done.
Yeah. Okay. That's good to know. I'm not a fan, as you know. I really want to watch The Big Sick.
It's so good. It's too bad you quit Amazon Prime because it's on there too.
No, it's not. It's not available for me. I was going to watch. That was one of the first things I clicked on.
That's so annoying.
Like a second. And then it went, oh, it's not available from your location.
That sucks. I can't believe that they can't even swing that since it's an Amazon original.
I know.
That's a little ridiculous.
Very, very frustrated. But Greek, I'm so glad Laura is watching Greek. Greek is the most like ray of sunshine show that you will ever watch. It is so good. And it's perfect to watch if you're feeling a bit under the weather. So, but I hope you feel better soon. I hope it's just a small sick for you. Rebecca Klaus says, hey ladies, have either of you had the chance to catch the pilot of Resident? Ooh, apropos question. If you like medical dramas at all, you will love it. It reminds me a lot of ER back in the day.
I'm really glad that there are people that are enjoying this. I wanted to really like it. The pilot didn't do much for me, but you know, maybe in like 3 episodes, I'll be like, yes, give me all the Resident.
Yes, maybe. Oh, it's you.
Mr. Glass says, I enjoyed Black Lightning very much. Still think a live action Static Shock would have been better, but Black Lightning is the hero we need right now, or until February 15th. What does that mean? What's coming out on February 15th?
No.
Mr. Glass, you're very ominous.
Hold on.
Oh, duh, Black Panther.
Oh, you got it. Yay. We should have.
Yes. Known. You know what? I'm so excited for, I think like The Incredibles, I can't believe we get Black Panther in February. I'm so excited for that.
I'm so excited. Jessica says, just finished listening to your call-in episode. I loved it. I hope you do more of them. I hope we do more of them too. I loved it as well.
And then we have one last tweet here from Laura who says, I remember Artemis Fowl movie rumors swirling as long ago as 2002. And fascinatingly, Rachel Lee Cook as Holly Short. I love Judi Dench as gender-bent Commander Root. That would not have happened in 2002, that's for sure. That's a really interesting tidbit. We talked about how we weren't really Artemis Fowl people, but that's really cool to hear that they have decided that I would gender bend too for Judi Dench.
Right. Just all the characters. Just
yeah.
Judi Dench. Yeah. That's so cool. I'm so glad. I'm excited to hear what you think of the movie. And that brings us to the end of our listener feedback for the week. Thank you so much to everybody who wrote in. If you have any questions or comments for us, you can tweet us at HypeableHype. You can email us, hype@hypeable.com. You can find us on Instagram at HypeableHype. You can find us on Tumblr, which is hypepodcast.tumblr.com. And you can find us on Hypeable itself, which is hypable.com. If you are interested in checking out our Patreon and becoming a subscriber at the $2 a month level, you can go over to patreon.com/hypepodcast and check it out. This week's bonus episode, will be about the Oscars 2018 nominations. Now, spoiler alert, I am completely out of the loop, so everything will be a surprise to me because I've been traveling and kind of had my mind elsewhere. So I'm excited for Pam to reveal the Oscar nominations to me. And you can also find that episode when it has been edited over on patreon.com/hypepodcast. Until next time, thanks for listening. My name is Selena.
And my name is Pamela.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Okay. Here we are.
Yes, finally. It's been 84 years.
It has. It's been 2,199 days. Ha ha ha. It's a Let the 100 reference. Get it? Get it?
Amazing.
Yay! Now I've done that. I don't need to talk about the 100 at all. Oh, wait. Yes, I do. At last year's event and this year's event to curate like a positive space. So like... Oh my god, that was a loud noise. What is happening? Can you hear that?
I can't. It's kind of scary. What is it?
I don't know.
It's like a it's like a buzzing sound, right?
Yes. Huh.
Is it, you know, are the nemeses of the 100 out to get us? Because
I wasn't going to say about anything. I was thinking of making the same joke. Oh my gosh.
It kind of said, it's like a creepy ear, you know, like in Lost, when Lost, like the credits start, it sounds really creepy. That's how I feel like.
Yes. Yeah. It's kind of, let's say that's what it is. I don't know if it's going to stop. I'm just going to keep going because, like, whatever. we'll fix it in post. Anyway, it's really distracting me.